this evening, what we're going to touch upon, and if I could take a step back, has anyone here attended or been to Yad Vashem? And specifically in Yad Vashem, it's probably about 12 years old now, 13 years old, something known as the Valley of the Communities. Has anyone been to the Valley of the Communities? What's the purpose of the Valley of Communities? The goal is that we get lost. We get lost in the area that's known as Slovakia. We get lost in the area that's known as Lita. We get lost in Galicia. And what happens in all these areas? Germany, Moravia, the Carpathian Mountains, Hungary. You have engraved in the stone the major cities, large letters engraved in the stone. The mid-sized cities, a little less, not as significant, the letters. The small towns, the dorfs, the shtetls, so it's in tinier, smaller level letters. But what comes out of it? When you experience the Valley of the Communities, you realize that there were thousands of Jewish communities. Each of them had their own minhagim. For instance, you know, we think of the Breuer's community in Germany, Frankfurt am Main. But what about the Jews of Würzburg? What about the Jews of other parts of Bayern? What about the Jews Hesse, Fulda? In Galicia, there were many Hasidic communities, many Misnagdic communities. There were those communities that were influenced more as a function of being part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. There were those that were a little bit towards the east, a Ukrainian influence to a greater degree in Galicia. What about in Poland? You had Zionists, you had Hasidim, Gera Hasidim, Amshanova Hasidim, Alexander Hasidim. You had great Misnagdim in Lita. And it goes on and on in Lita and Hungary, in all parts of Moravia, Bohemia. What's the point? A lot of times, we fail to realize that each of these communities, I'll give you an example, they each had their own way of keeping Shabbos. They had different tunes. They had a different learning program. They each had their own minhagim, the way they observed the 3 weeks, the way they observed Hanukkah, Purim. They each had great Talmidei Chachamim at some point in their history. Some of their Talmidei Chachamim were great Darshanim, some of their Talmidei Chachamim were great Halachic people, there some of them were great Lamdanim. Now, I'll give you an example. We think that most of the great Lamdanim came from Lita. But the author of the Minchas Chinuch, Rabbi Babad, he actually was he taught young children in Galicia. The Kitsos, his last name was Heller. I think he was in Galicia. But each of these communities had something that made them special, unique, dynamic. Each of them had their own way of relating to our Mesorah, our tradition. They each invested something into our tradition and our Mesorah. And the tragedy of that is that they're all gone. Today we have something, and I say it in a positive and a negative. It's not meant to knock. I call it the Art Scroll Siddur Judaism. Meaning what? What's nice about the Art Scroll Siddur is no matter what shul you'll go to, you could walk in and find an Art Scroll Siddur. And we can all daven out of the same Siddur. Now, there's something very nice about that, in unifying. And there's something very tragic about that. Because we're not all from the same Mesorah. We pronounce, for instance, the Cholam, we pronounce that. If you're a Litvak, you pronounce it as an A. Kadesh, Kadesh, Kadesh. If you're German, Au, Kadaush, Kadaush, Kadaush. If you're not German, you're not a Litvak, let's say you're Polish, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Right? Just pronunciation. Foods. Minhagim. How do you prepare for Yom Kippur? How do you prepare for Pesach? All of these different aspects. What are your weddings like? What takes place at a wedding? It all is a function of these communities, and it's all lost. In America, we just have lost those hundreds and thousands of mesorahs that you see when you experience the Valley of the Communities. We were a tapestry. We were a tapestry educationally, spiritually, from a point of view of singing, from a point of view of foods, from a point of view of how to raise children. And it really made us something very special. And that was all taken away between 1939 and 1945. And as much as we try in America, it's not so simple to rebuild that. That background, which we all can relate to, is the background to our discussion this evening, the tenth of the kinos. There's a famous kina, Eicha Yashva Chavatzelus HaSharon. What is this tenth kina? It uses the system of the first parak of Eicha. It uses a system of what the Aleph to Tav, the acrostic. And by the way, what's the idea of Aleph to Tav? What was Yirmiyahu teaching us? The devastation that we experience this time of year, the devastation that we experience that culminates on Tisha B'Av, we can try as hard as we may, we can try with all of our energy and attention to try to reflect upon it and to encapsulate it. We just can't encapsulate it. You know why? Because we use every letter of the alphabet. We use from Aleph to Tav, and it's beyond us. We just cannot encapsulate. That's why Yirmiyahu wrote Eicha with the acrostic of Aleph to Tav. It's so all-encompassing. It is so profound. We can't get a grip on it. That's the idea. And the Kalir, the author of this kinnah, the author of most of the kinnahs that we read, he borrowed that methodology from Yirmiyahu. What specifically is discussed in the 10th kinnah? Eicha Yashva Chavatzelus HaSharon. What's discussed is the loss of the Chaf Dalet Mishmaros, the 24 communities throughout the length and breadth of our homeland. The 24 communities that created a network, an educational network that transformed us, the Jewish people. Take a step back for a second. Who are we referring to by these 24 communities? The 24 Mishmaros HaKahuna. The 24 groups of Kohanim. And what am I referring to? We're referring to two things. Number one is, the word Kohen doesn't mean a priest. It's not someone who engages in, you know, ritual worship. Kohen means a mentor, an educator, a role model. That's what a Kohen is. We are called, the Jewish people, Mamleches Kohanim. What does Hashem say? V'atem tiyu li Mamleches Kohanim. You, the Jewish people, should be, to me, what? Role models, mentors to the rest of humanity, to the family of nations. You know, Yeshaya Navi, Or LaGoyim, right? We're the light into the nations, the role models. Well, if we're supposed to be the Mamleches Kohanim, who are our role models? Who's going to teach us? Who's going to inspire us? Who's going to develop and perfect us? So there's this institution called the Kahuna. And last week, Sidra and Korach, we discussed a lot about the Kahuna. And you see that as well in Parshas Emor. What's the role of the Kohanim? The primary role of the Kohen is not to function in the Beis HaMikdash. A Kohen only functions in the Beis HaMikdash 2 days out of 48 weeks. What do I mean? Maybe 2 days out of 48 weeks. There are 24 Mishmaros, right? There's a 24 groups. They each come to Yerushalayim their week. So imagine in a 52-week year, most Kohanim will only be in Yerushalayim 2 weeks. The weeks of their Mishmar. But then within your week of the Mishmar, they break up all those Kohanim, they break them down, I should say, into Batei Av. What is Batei Av? It's a function of your family. So let's say your family, which is in this Mishmar, so on Tuesday, you're going to be working in the Beis HaMikdash. But even then, you may not be working because there's a lottery of who can do what. And obviously there are many more Kohanim than there are, you know, opportunities in the lottery. So what's the point? The Kohanim go to Yerushalayim every 24th week. But they may not even be doing the Avodah. What's the primary role of the Kohen? What's the primary function and purpose of the Kohen? It's to be the teacher. It's Shabbos and Yom Tov, when people are not at work, to give the Shiurim, or to set up the Beis Medrash program, or to be involved in the Manny Fried Learning Program, right, the parent-grandparent-child program, Or it could be setting up chavrusas so that they come and do lunch and learns in the hospital, or lunch and learns in Wall Street, or on the different jobs that people are at. They're meant to be teachers, educators, role models. That's the primary purpose of the Kohen. That's why they get these various taxes that we read about in this past Parsha and Parsha's Korach. I'll give you just a modern example that's based upon the Torah. We have a system in New Jersey. It's called the public school teachers. And the professors at Rutgers or at the community colleges. We pay taxes, and a good portion of our tax dollars goes towards what? Funding a segment of the population called the educators. And their job is to educate the youth of New Jersey. Using that analogy, that is predicated upon the institution of the kahuna. Now, with the destruction of these 24 communities, and we'll see, some were in the south, some were in the north in the Galilee, some were along the Mediterranean, some were in the Judean hills. What happens? With the destruction of these cities, or the displacement of these cities, think about our going back to the analogy of the Valley of the Communities. Not every Jewish community in Europe was destroyed physically in terms of the destruction of the buildings. Very often what happened was the people were taken, they were removed. The Jews were removed from the town. Those of you who have read the book, or it's a permanent exhibit at the Holocaust Museum, Eishishuk. Eishishuk was a Lithuanian Jewish community for 800 years. And Dr. Yaffa Eliach, who was one of the few survivors of that community, just parenthetically, the Lithuanian Jews were decimated more than any other group in Europe. Only 8% of Lithuanian Jews survived the Holocaust. But this community, Eishishuk, a small community in Lithuania, in the course of a couple of days, the Jews were either destroyed, murdered, or removed, or taken away. So it's not necessarily the physical destruction of the buildings, it might be the removal of the people. And we'll talk about it as we go through the kinah, yesh v'yesh. But with that destruction of the communities, what do we lose? We lose the whole fabric, the whole personality, the whole three-dimensional component of the Jewish people. And you and I know, it's very difficult to recreate a community. Now in America, we've got communities that are developing personalities after 100 years or after 70 years. But it takes time. It takes time to build infrastructure, yeshivas, shuls, mikvahs, but not just that, chesed organizations. There's a whole infrastructure that takes decades to develop. I mean, I'll just use an example. It's a terrible example. It's our example. It's our story, the American Jewish story. In 1952 was 60 years ago. There was a study done of American Jews, and there were 3% intermarriage. Today, 60 years later, 2012, we don't know exactly what the intermarriage rate is. We assume it's somewhere in the high 50s, 58, 57, somewhere in that range. How do you go from 3% to 58%? Because there was no infrastructure. There was no educational network. You didn't have the kind of chesed organizations, the kind of educational institutions, the kind of shuls that did what? That nourished the people. And that is the problem. That's the problem with this destruction. It's not per se only about the loss of life. It's about the loss of the very fabric that made up and that defined us as Jews. Parenthetically, the Rav mentioned this. There were three of the Mishmaros that we knew about from different places in the Gemara or Tanakh. If it weren't for this kinna of the Kalir, we wouldn't have even known what were the 24 communities. What were the 24 Mishmaros? What I mean by that is this. For instance, you'll see Beit Lechem, Nazareth, Nazrat, Tzipori. It doesn't mean that every Kohen in that Mishmar lived in Tzipori, or every Kohen in that Mishmar lived in Nazrat. But that was the center, that's where most of them lived. And you know, and there were communities and villages around it. I'll give you an example. Very often you talk to a Jew, a survivor from the Carpathian Mountains. Where are you from? I'm a Munkácsa. Believe me, there weren't that many Munkácsas. Munkácsa was a city, but there are many little villages and towns in that area. They refer to themselves as being from Munkácsa. You understand? You have that many Jews refer to themselves as Würzburgers. They didn't all live in Würzburg. Many of them lived in suburbs or lived in little villages outside of Würzburg. That's the idea here of these 24. Now what's fascinating is it communicates to us the loss of these communities. But in each paragraph, almost in each paragraph, what the Kalir says is he explains why we lost that community. What were the flaws of the Jewish people? And we're going to go through not all 24, maybe we'll go through 7 or 8 of them if we have time. But the idea is the following, that in Echa starts out questioning God. Either according to the Rav, Echa means why. The one day a year we have the right, we have the license, one day a year to question the Almighty, the perfect, the infinite one. And that's what Echa means. Or, according to Rabbi Przanski's Rebbe, who's a Talmud of the Rav, Rabbi Chait, Echa doesn't mean why, it means what? It's a rhetorical question. How could it be? Echa Yashav Adad. How could it be that this city, Yerushalayim, that was teeming with millions of people on the holidays, how can it be that I just can't believe it, I can't fathom how it sits here desolate and empty? Devoid of traffic, of human beings. It's a rhetorical question. So whether Echa means why, it's actually questioning God, or we're asking ourselves, we're not questioning God, we're asking ourselves a rhetorical question. How could it be? The first two prakim of Megillas Echa don't address an answer to that question. In the third parak, parak Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Lamed Tes, that's when Yirmiyahu starts to address how this happened. What were the flaws of the Jewish people? Because there's a certain, there comes a certain point where you can't hear an answer. You don't want to even hear. What do you mean? All you want to do is you're distraught. You're in a state of shock. You're hurting and pain. I'll use an analogy. We have a famous statement that we say in Pirkei Avos that we apply whenever there's a loss of a loved one. B'shah shameisum mutu lefanav, al tenachameu b'shah shameisum mutu lefanav. Don't try to comfort and console somebody when their dead is in front of them, meaning before the burial. They're just the emotions are too acute. The hurt and the pain is too raw. Give someone time before you can. They have the ability to rebuild and move forward. Here in this kina, already is an attempt to analyze, to force us to be introspective, to do tshuva as to what brought about the devastation, what brought about the destruction. So let's give an example. Let's take Bayes. Bachositke, right? The Bayes, the bet of the Echa, here it's borrowed. Michumesh Svarim. It's as if the five books of Moshe, the five books of the Torah are crying. Crying over the loss of the people who are supposed to observe them, study them, live by them. But why is there such pain and hurt? Kenherag Kohen V'Navi B'Yom HaKippurim. Because the very Jewish people who were given a mentor to teach them to live by that Torah, his name was Zechariah HaNavi, not Zechariah that we have from the Bayesheni, that's the famous Zechariah HaNavi. This Zechariah HaNavi was a Kohen who lived in the Bayes Rishon. And what happened? In the time of Yehoash, they did not want to hear his message. They executed him. He was a Kohen who was a Navi. He was murdered by his own people in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur that fell out on Shabbos. You ever hear baseball hitting for the cycle? This is hitting for more than the cycle. This is five. A Kohen who was a Navi, who was executed in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur that fell out on Shabbos. And like, nothing ever happened. It's sort of like the news today, right? You hear the news, you know, terrible news, and then you get the stock report, and then you find out how the Yankees are doing, and then the weather report, and then the traffic report, and then there's who's playing, you know, what concert, who's going to be playing at the Izod Center, and then playing in the garden. And then, you know, gardening tips. Like, when a tragedy like this happens, when a corruption, when a vile, heinous crime like this happens, you don't go on Olam Kiminago Noeg. But they did. They tried to cover it up. They denied it. They moved on. And they never came to grips with the horrific thing that they did as a people, as a community. The Al Damo Nishchatu Prachim Kitzvirim. As a consequence of his execution, and this, if you, I don't know if we'll be doing it this summer. Let me just take a look at the schedule. We will. We'll be doing it on July 26. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the great Spanish Pietan, writes a kina regarding his execution and the aftermath of his execution and the consequence of his execution by his own people. Young Kohanim, like birds, you know, the way birds would be killed. What does that mean? If someone is a Zav or a Zava, if someone gives birth to a child, they bring these birds to the Beis HaMikdash. So there was a lot of birds that were used. So these young Kohanim were slaughtered by the Babylonian legions like young birds. The Nadu Kitziparim, what happened? Navanad is like the term that you find by Cain. We became exiles. We became refugees and fugitives, like the birds that fly away. You ever come into a flock of birds, you know, you drive your car by or you run by them and they all fly away like that? Kohanei Tzipori. Now, Tzipori is interesting. Have any of you been to Tzipori? It's a beautiful archaeological dig. For many years, the University of Michigan has partnered in an archaeological dig. Tzipori was a massive center. One of the other communities we're going to study was a community by the name of Yudfat. Anyone ever heard of Yudfat? Hasn't been rebuilt. We know where Yudfat is. When you go to the archaeological site, and you go, and you should, when you're in Israel in the Galilee, you've got to go to Tzipori. It's really something. But you can see Yudfat. There's actually an observant community, Mitzpe Hoshaya. Elazar Stern, the highest ranking Orthodox general in the history of the IDF, he lives in there. Danny Statman, the famous professor of Jewish philosophy at Bar-Ilan, he at Haifa University, he lives there. So Mitzpe Hoshaya, in fact, many of the Israel programs, the summer programs will go there. They come back with these T-shirts, do it on the donkey. What happens? They experience how Avram and Sarah lived, you know, and they eat the way they ate, and they sit the way they sat, and they do things on the donkey, and they do all kinds of, there's like an experience that they have in Mitzpe Hoshaya. That's one mountain. The next mountain over is Tzipori. In a mountain about 45 degree angle from Tzipori is Yudfat. Yudfat is famous. Why? When the Jews started the revolt in 66 against the Romans, the leader of the Galilean revolt, his name was Yosef ben Matisyahu. We refer to him by his Latin name, Josephus Flavius, the famous Josephus. When Yudfat fell in Josephus, they were caged in by the Romans. They were out of supplies. They did a suicide pact. And they ended up committing suicide. And the last one left, Josephus, instead of committing suicide, tells the Romans, I saved your lives. Instead of us revolting and fighting back, you can come in. So initially they take him as a prisoner of war. He eventually becomes the official Roman historian of the events that lead up to and after the event of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of Judea. He becomes the official Roman historian. And much of what we have, I'm not talking about the parts that were censored and doctored by the Christians. I'm talking about the parts that were not doctored. Much of our historical knowledge of these events comes from Josephus. So he lived in Yudfat, and that community was wiped out. He wasn't the only Kohen. It was a community that had many Kohanim. The Jews in Sipari see that their neighbors, their cousins, have been, they're dead. They're all gone. Sipari decides what? To allow the Romans in. Not to fight. Sipari survives for a significant amount of time. You go to Sipari, you have everything. After the Bar Kokhba revolt and the aftermath of it, when the Sanhedrin in exile reestablishes itself, one of the places it reestablishes itself is Sipari. Our tradition is that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi edited the Mishnah in Sipari. But in the same Sipari, you have Roman amphitheaters. You have, you know, all kinds of nonsense that the Jews were not particularly excited about taking place. Sipari, in that sense, was a major center in the Galilee, pretty cosmopolitan, and I don't say that in the most positive of terms, cosmopolitan city. But the Kohanim of Sipari, for a great period of time, had religious freedom, had the ability to teach. Other times, depending on who the Roman leadership was, it was disbanded. As you know, the Sanhedrin had to leave Sipari, and it goes to Tveria. So we lost the brilliance, the substance, the great educational center that Sipari was. We lost Yudfat, we mentioned. I'll give you an example. If you skip to the hay, Hayu malivim belochamei lechem. What would they do? Lochamei lechem, like the famous work of the Ramban, Milchamas Hashem, the wars of God, meaning it's the intellectual battles to understand the truth of God. So lochamei lechem is a way of describing the scholars, the chachamim. What would happen? They were divided up, meaning the scholars, and remember, keep in mind one thing. What did the Germans do? When they came into a town, one of the first people they killed was the rabbi. One of the first people that they took and humiliated were the rabbis. Because that's how you break the people. It was no different with the Romans. The Romans went after the Kohanim. They were our rabbis. Kivitlu, but now it tells us what was the problem. Kivitlu halo paros l'roiv lechem. What's that phrase? Halo paros l'roiv lechem. That's from the famous Haftorah of Yom Kippur. What does God say? In Yeshaya, reflecting the knowledge of God. Do you think I want your fasts? You know what I want? I want you to take care of the people who are poor and starving and hungry. I want you to take care of the needy. The purpose of a fast is not to fast. The purpose of the fast is to bring about a change as individuals, as a society, where we're more sensitive. We're more sympathetic and empathetic, more charitable. So what happened? Apparently, the leadership did not ensure that the downtrodden and meek were taken care of. They didn't fulfill halo paros l'roiv lechem, to provide for the famished bread. V'ravu v'tzamu, and they themselves became famished. Tzamu means that they thirsted mimayim u'milechem. Givitlu shtei halechem. And as a function of that, what? The famous shtei halechem became nullified mibeis lechem. Bethlehem, you know where that is, the Judean hills, correct? But what was special about Beit Lechem? It was the breadbasket of Israel. It wasn't just one of the great centers of education where you had a series of Kohanim that would educate the Jews south of Jerusalem in the Judean hills. Beit Lechem was the Kansas and Nebraska of Israel. The Gemara in Menachos says, where did the Omer come from? Where did the Shtei Lechem come from? The Judean hills. I mean, you and I today, we're witnessing a modern miracle. Because you know why? 65, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, from that point, going all the way back to maybe the second century, a Jew could not have imagined that Bethlehem was the breadbasket of Israel. You know what it is? What it was for about 1800 years? It was a bunch of empty, barren rocks. Empty, barren mountains. What could that produce? Today, you go to the Gush, you go to Alon Shvut, or Kfar Etzion. You go to these communities, and it's flourishing with flowers, with grain, with orchards. It's beautiful. It's green. It's plush. And that is literally a reliving. See, Jews for 1800 years couldn't imagine what it was talking about in Megillus Rus. What are you talking about? Ruth? This is where there's wheat? This is the wheat harvest? This is the barley harvest? Give me a break. Barren mountains. But now we can relate to it. Once again, we can relate to it. And we see what we think is Rocky Mountains, how rich in minerals and how rich in terms of producing grains and crops and flowers and orchards, etc. That area is. That's Beit Lechem. The next one we're going to skip only because we talked about Yudfat. Turn the page over to 270-271. The Zion. Zachra Zaman Asher Nasa V'Nishma Heshivu. They remember the famous covenant at Sinai. What happened? The Jewish people responded, Nasa V'Nishma. We are committed to this value system. V'ata now Anos Amein Lo Avu. We're at a point now where defiantly we won't even answer Amein. What does Amein mean? Amein means that I'm committed. You make a bracha, I answer Amen. What does that mean? It's another way of saying that what you said, I stand by, I confirm, it's the absolute truth. Let's say you make a bracha on food. That the source of all blessing is God, the master of the universe. The one who created the fruit before you bite into an apple. And I say Amen. What am I doing? I'm committed myself. I agree. I'm participating in your statement. The Jews stop saying Amen. God is not responsible for this. God is not the creator of this. He is not the source of all blessing. It was an act of defiance to their creator. You know what? If we throw away, if we trade off our sustainer, our creator, so then we're left to ourselves. And ultimately what happened? We've come a long way from when we committed to our Creator by saying Nasa V'Nishma, committing ourselves to His covenant, to His system. So La Navarosh Savu V'Ravu. We became satiated with what? With bitterness, with noxious nerves. With noxious herbs. V'Huksu V'Hulavu Kohane Elvu. So there was a community, Elvu. I'll give you another example. The Tess. Kohane Arbel. You know where the Arbel is? It's a beautiful mountain overlooking the Kinneret. When you're in Tveria and you look up and you see a mountain, that's the Arbel. One time I remember we went four-wheeling and jeeping. It's a lot of fun going up on the Arbel. It's a high point. You know, at the eastern extremity of the Galilee. The lower Galilee, and you have a beautiful view, not just of the Kinneret, but of many areas. Nitai Har Bailey, the famous from Pirkei Avos, right? Nitai Har Bailey, he lived in this mountain, Arbel. Many foreigners, foreign tourists, as well as Israelis, I think it's called, is it called a shtimmer? They go up to the Arbel, and people have, like, you can rent, like, a house or rent a cottage, you know, like a vacation home. And it's a wonderful area up there. So, what happened? Tumasa Hechanifa Sevel. Her profanity, it perverted, it corrupted the land. Tevel's the land. Vinale Rav HaChovel. Who's the captain of the ship? The Almighty. He ascended. What's the point? The land of Israel, the way that God set up the land of Israel, it's under specific providence, under the Hashgacha. It does not tolerate corruption and perversion. It's not like other lands. Providentially, it doesn't tolerate that kind of corruption and perversion. So that's what the Jews are going to do. That providential support, that providential, so to speak, protection, is removed. The Onan Avak Raglav Ka'avil. And what happens? A cloud of dust at his feet, like a mourner. No longer clothed in... So we went from being these aristocratic, wonderful people to being what? Mourners. People who have substance have shoes, nice leather shoes to support themselves. The mourner has no leather shoes. It's like we become bereft of everything. The aim is karbel b'kone arbel. Give you an example. Another center of Kohanim in the north is Tzvas. If you look at the Lamed, Lo lamarom ayin tzafas. We didn't look towards heaven. In other words, you know, what is the idea of looking towards heaven? You pray to God. That's not what we did. The kesef alcheres chipas. We were corrupt in business. What did we do? We basically, instead of having silver, all metal kalim, utensils, we would have earthenware, which are cheaper, very much cheaper material. And what would we do? We would silver plate it. So I'll sell you what you think is a silver vessel. It's not really a silver vessel. All it is has got silver plating on it. So I'm a thief. Because you're paying for the weight in silver, as well as the artistry. And I'm not giving you the weight in silver. We were corrupt in business. Our business dealings were dishonest. Uvechizuk musar hurpas, veneras venilpas koinsvas. As a function of that, uprooted and overturned was the community of Tzvas. Something fascinating here. Look at the mem. Mimarom hishmiya nil esi ta'on. From on high, let it be heard that God could tolerate, no longer tolerate this. Vihikani bi'ivaron v'shigaon. God smote me with blindness, going crazy. Think about people who are suffering in pain. Great, there's great psychological damage that happens to people. But here's the key line. Upakad alai avon no v'givon. Was visited upon me the sin of no v'givon. Now, no v'givon didn't take place during the time of the Second Temple. It didn't take place during the time of the First Temple. Nov and Givon is something that predates the first Beis HaMikdash. It goes back to the time of Shaul. What happened is a function of what Doeg HaDomi did. He played Shaul. The Kohanim of Nov were executed. And the Givonim, many of them lost Parnassah, many of them lost their lives. So this was a sin that was done pre the period of the Meluch of David, during the time of Shaul HaMelech. But somehow we never came to grips with that. Somehow we never made right on that. And what? It comes back to haunt us. We all know in life, there are certain times that what happens. You do the wrong thing. You treat someone the wrong way. You don't develop a relationship. Whatever it is. And when you don't make good on that corruption, you don't make good on that flaw, it's there. It festers. It festers. It festers. And it manifests itself. We see that in raising children. There are things that we wish we would have done in terms of their education. There are things that we wish we would have done in terms of where we sent them. And we didn't. And you know what? It comes back to haunt us. 40, 50 years later, we suffer for our mistakes of what happened. That's what happened to the Jewish people. The corruption comes back and it hits them. God's sense of history and God's timeline is much longer, is much more patient, and he has much more time than we do. We live a very short time on this earth. So we want everything, right? We want it. 22 minutes is a sitcom, 48 minutes is a drama, a full-length motion picture, an hour and 15 minutes. We want it like the Nike saying, just do it. I want it and I want it now. But that's not God's sense of history, and that's not God's timeline. And that's for the positive and for the negative. So what happened? The Na'ami Ma'on, who became from the word Na the Nad, who became displaced, who became refugees from their place? The Mishmeret, the Mishmar of Beit Ma'on. What do you see? As a function of the mistakes that were made, as a function of some of the flaws, we ended up what? Losing our very infrastructure. And the point of this kinna, is that once you lose these educational centers, the communities where the Kohanim lived, the communities where the Kohanim functioned, then you destroy the whole fabric of the society. You destroy the whole fabric of the civilization. What do we mean by that? Because what happens? You lose your teachers. You lose your role models. You lose your mentors. You lose everything. The damage in the ramifications of what happened to us in Europe did not stop in 1945. When all of these children who survived, adolescents who survived, were wrenched, they never received the education that you'd love to give a Jewish girl or a Jewish boy. And they don't have parents to mentor and nurture them. And even though they survive and they end up either in Israel, they end up in America or Canada or Australia, it's not the same. It's not the same if they've been raised and developed and nurtured in a loving community with all of its institutions. And that's what's being described here. Take a look at the tzaddik. Tzaddik hu Hashem kifihu maras. This is the famous quote from, I believe, the fourth parak of Eicha. We come to a point where we acknowledge God is righteous. This is not happening whimsically. This is not happening for naught. There is a basis to why the Churban is taking place. And what is that? Because we have rebelled and rejected His word. Kifiu Maraz is specifically referring to the word of Yirmiyahu, who's speaking on behalf of the Almighty. The Aru Aru Ada Yasodba, that's a quote from the 137th Psalm. That's what the enemies say. See, the first pasuk is from the Babylonian destruction. The second pasuk is an allusion to the Roman destruction, the descendants of Esau of Rome, who want to uproot and destroy everything until the foundation, destroy everything the Jewish people have. Utimur, from the word Timura. And in place of Aziv Zimraska, in place of what? The Shiras Hayam, where the Jewish people saw the providential hand of Chesed, what do we have instead? Kinim Aleha Nechara. Instead of singing Az Yashir Moshe, song of Shiros of Shebach, what do we end up singing? Kinim. Kinos, I apologize. Lamentations. Uvekatzve Eretz Nizrat, Mishmeret Nazrat. What's Nazrat? Nazareth. Again, another community in the Galilee. Nazareth, you know, we're all familiar with the carpenter of Nazareth. Nazareth was a Jewish community, a significant Jewish community in the Galilee. The Kuf. Karasi Batsarli Velo Karav. I called out in my sense of suffering and pain and distress. But what? God did not come close. Vikonanti bayar ba'arav. I lamented. I said lamentations in the forest of Arav. That doesn't necessarily mean the forest, but it means in the brush of Arav. What is Arav? You know what Arav is? Yemen. Arabia. Yemen, yeah. Exactly. What's the point? This is referring to what the Jews did when they were fleeing the Babylonians. We went to our cousins, the descendants of Ishmael. We went to our Arab cousins. And instead of them looking after us and taking care of us, what happened? They fed us salty food. And we thought that they were giving us liquid, you know, to wash it down, water to wash it down. It was really these air sacs. And I'm not sure, I'm not a GI, so I apologize exactly what happened. But something to the effect of, it affected the whole abdominal system. And literally, we died, instead of finding respite and support and sustenance from our Arab cousins, they killed us. And this is Konanti Bayar Barav. The Kava Ner Hadolek B'marav. That candle that burned in the west, it was extinguished. What is that referring to? You and I know there's a menorah in the Kodesh. And what would happen? When the Kohen would light every afternoon, when he would light the seven candles, there would be enough oil to last the night. So you come back the next morning, and six of the seven candles of the menorah were extinguished naturally. Laws of physics. It can only, a candle can only burn as long as there's fuel to fuel the candle. But one of them defied the laws of physics. That's what we refer to as the Ner Ma'aravi. If you assume that the menorah went from north to south, the Ner Ma'aravi was the middle candle. If you assume that it went from east to west, Ner Ma'aravi is a western candle. We'll see what that means. You know, what does that mean, the western candle? But the point is, there was one candle that always defied the laws of physics. In the time of Shimon HaTzadik, that miracle stopped. What does it mean to defy the laws of physics? This was a testimony that the Jewish people were under the Hashgacha. That God, even in the Beis HaMikdash Sheni, which didn't have all the grandeur and majesty, it didn't have all the components of the first Beis HaMikdash. But even in the second temple, providence was there. Providence was manifest. But unfortunately, Kava Ner HaDolek, that candle that was burning became extinguished. The Reach Lo Arav, in the fragrance that we gave off, was not pleasant. What is that referring to? The korbanos that we bring in the Beis HaMikdash should be Reach Nichoach. They should be pleasant before God. And they weren't pleasant. Lo Arav, Me'achala Arav. This Mishmar was called Achala Arav. And so you have, and we're going to be skipping at this point, but the point is, you have these various stanzas, each focused on the different communities. Some of these communities we've renamed in modern times, some of them have never received their name again. But this was the whole network, this was the whole system of our educators, of our role models, of our mentors, that did what? They didn't spend their time per se in the Beis HaMikdash. They spent their time with us. They spent their time nurturing and educating and mentoring us. And once they were destroyed, we were destroyed. Once they were exiled, we're exiled. But not just that we're exiled. We're exiled bereft of all the richness of the fabric of our community, of what makes us. I'm going to end on this point. This point the Rav made when he taught this kina. Have any of you, I think we all have been in this room, to Shar Yafo or Shar Shem? Right, we've all gone through the Jaffa Gate, if you're going. Why is it called the Jaffa Gate, by the way? Because if you followed that road, it would go east-west. It would get you to the Jaffa port. And you could go to all parts of the world. Why is it called Shar Shem? That was the north-south artery throughout the city of Jerusalem. And if you left that gate and you'd go north, it would get you to Damascus. But if you walk from Shar Yafo, not at a brisk pace, but at a moderate pace, how long will it take you to get to the Kotel from Shar Yafo? 15 minutes? Maybe less? 20 minutes if you're a slow walker? When did the Romans break through the siege of Jerusalem? When did they pierce through the walls? On the 17th of Tammuz. When did the Romans get to the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount? The afternoon of Tisha B'Av. 21 days. The Roman soldiers were not shlemiels. The Roman soldiers were pretty adept and pretty capable. If it takes you and I 20 minutes to walk from Shar Yafo to the Kotel, so you want to go up to the Temple Mount, it'll take you 22 minutes. Okay? If that's what it would take us, 23 minutes, how come it took them 21 days? How did it take them 21 days? You know why? Would you say? Exactly. Resistance. Who were resisting? Who in Yerushalayim were resisting? Trying to, literally, with their last breath, hand-to-hand combat, foot by foot, they were fighting the Roman soldiers, trying to prevent them from getting to the Beis HaMikdash. Who was doing that? Primarily the Kohanim. The Kohanim suffered more than anyone else. Not just in the 24 Mishmaros, in these communities, like Yudfas, but in Yerushalayim itself as well. And with the loss of those Kohanim, was the loss of our whole infrastructure, was the loss of what shaped us, what defined us, what made us as a people. That's the great tragedy. So what do we do in this kingdom? It's not just about macro destruction. And it's not only about micro destruction, which is an individual. It's about the infrastructure. It's about the villages, towns, and cities that make up the fabric of Klal Yisrael. And this kina, I think, speaks to us in the aftermath of the Shoah in a very, very powerful way. This kina, by the way, spoke to the Jews after the events of what we call Tach V'Tat. Tach V'Tat, literally 1648-1649. It was the Ukrainian revolt with their Tartar mercenaries against the Polish Catholics. But who suffered the most in that revolt? Who was the object of the wrath of the Ukrainians? It was the Jews, the Chmelnytsky massacres. It was the Jews. We lost probably over 100,000 Jews. Tens of thousands more were sold. Slaves were uprooted. Communities destroyed. Fled to all parts of the world. That was the beginning of the downfall of Polish Jewry. Polish Jewry never ever recovered. Ukrainian Jewry, Galiciana Jewry, Litvisha Jewry, it never ever recovered from the aftermath of Tach V'Tat, which literally 1648-1649, but the whole period was 1648-1653. And with the destruction of the communities, and by the way, if any of you want to, I think you can order it on Amazon. That's where I got it. There's a book called Abyss of Despair. Abyss of Despair. It's an English translation of a work called Yevein Metzula. Yevein Metzula is the eyewitness accounts recorded by Rabbi Nassan Nata Hanover. Rabbi Nassan Nata Hanover, he himself was a survivor of Tach V'Tat. But he recorded from the survivors of what happened in Nemirov, and what happened in Lemberg, Lvov, and what happened in this community, in this city. It's an eyewitness recording of the events of the Chmelnytsky massacres. That story, the story of the Chavdal Mishmaros HaKahuna, and our story, the loss of the communities of 70 years ago, that's what happens. And that's what we mourn on Tisha B'Av. Not just the macro, not just the micro, but the shape and the fabric of each and every community. And where I want to end is this. It's beautiful that we all daven from the same sitter on one hand. But on the other hand, we each have an obligation to find out what is our Mesorah. What songs did, and what were the tunes that were sung at the Shabbos table? What are the unique minhagim? Unique minhagim on this holiday, that holiday, the way we do this. What educational, you know, methodology was employed in the places that we come from? And we have an obligation to continue that Mesorah so that ultimately that very, very fabric, the tapestry that makes up the Jewish people, is not lost, is not destroyed. Thank you.